Right, good evening. We are looking at Parshas Vayetzeh, and the Maimah, the discourse we're going to be looking at, is from this Shabbat, from 1964. So the Dvar Malchus, which we're using their good offices of editing these discourses, they're running through the year 1964 now.
I haven't got one.
Oh, sorry. So, and they have all been printed. They were printed in Likutei Sichot, Volume 5, in Yiddish. And the Dvar Malchus people can see that this is really a discourse. It's a discourse that was said as a sicha. And so they've taken it out. So now let's have a look at the beginning of the Sedra. So first looking at the beginning of the Sedra, Vayetze Yaakov mibe'er Sheva, Vayelech Harana. Yaakov left, he went out of Be'er Sheva, and he went to Haran. Vayifga b'makom, and he met the place. Now, Vayifga means he met, but it's also explained as meaning he prayed. And so he instituted the evening prayer. That's our tradition about that. Vayalen sham, and he stayed there. He slept there. Kivah ha-shemesh, because the sun had set. Vayikach me'avnei makom, and he took some stones from the place. Vayasem rashotav, and he put them as a pillow at his head, or surrounding his head as protection. Vayishkav b'makom ahu, and he slept in that place. And Rashi points out, in that place he slept, but for 14 years previously, he didn't sleep because he'd been studying Torah, and he was up all the time studying, which is a famous Jewish ideal of studying Torah day and night without sleep, proper sleep.
I wondered always how he could sleep on his head on stones. Mm-hmm. He must have been tired after 14.
Ve'yachalom, and he dreamt. Ve'hinei sulam mutzav atza, and there was a ladder standing on the ground. V'rosho magia hashamayma, and its head was reaching the heavens. Ve'hinei malachei Elokim, and angels of God, olim ve'yordim bo, were going up and down the ladder. V'hine Hashem nitzav alav, and God was over the ladder. V'yomah, and he said, Ani Hashem elokei Avraham avicha, I am Hashem, the God of Abraham your father, v'elokei Yitzchak, and the God of Isaac. Ha'aretz asher ata shochiv aleh, the land on which you are sleeping, on which you're lying. Lecha etnena ulezarech, I will give it to you and to your children. And Rashi says, the whole land of Israel was like folded up under where he was sleeping. V'haya zaracha ka'afa aretz, and your children will be like the dust of the earth. Uferatzta yama v'kedma v'tzafona v'negma, and you'll burst out to the west and the east and the north and the south. V'nivruchu v'cha kol mishpachot ha'adama, and all families of the earth will be blessed through you, and through your children. And it goes on, this blessing from God and Yaakov's response. So this image of the ladder is a very powerful image. There have been many different paintings by different painters expressing that. Have you done one?
Yeah, I was thinking of Barbara's one. That's what made me smile.
Yeah, yeah. That's, but through you know, through the centuries, there have been quite a few fascinating paintings, and it's a very powerful image, and there are a number of different ways in which it's understood. So the discourse is itself going to speak about some of them and then focus on a particular one, an unusual explanation. Now, even though the discourse was not introduced by a melody, by the mimer melody, when it was first said, because it was a mimer posing as an ordinary talk, but nonetheless, to help us understand it, we'll sing the mimer melody. Yamba ya 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 yo ya yo ha yada yada yo ya yo ha yamba yamba ya yo ba bo ha yada damba yamba da damba yo ba yo yamba da damba yamba yo ba yada damba yamba yo Ha yere damba, ha yere damba, ho ya yamba yere damba, ha ha ya ya yere damba, ho ya ya yo ya ya yo. So here we are, Shabbat Parshat Vayetse, 9th of Kislev, 1964. Vayachalom vihine sulam mutzav atza. And he dreamt, and behold, there was a ladder positioned on the ground. V'ita b'mayma shel ha-tzemach tzedek. And it says in a discourse of the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, ba'achar ha-bichlech sheyatzu lachrona lecheirot, in one of the books of manuscripts, which recently was released, that means in 1964, there was a wonderful collection of manuscripts of Hasidic teachings had been brought to 770, and later the Rebbe published them in about 50 volumes, the Tzemach Tzedek's manuscripts. Shematzinu b'midrash, that we find in the Midrash, kama perushim al ha-sulam, a number of explanations of the ladder. Perush harishon, the first explanation, v'hine sulam, there's a ladder. What's the ladder? Zeha kevesh. The kevesh is the slope going up to the altar. So the slope going up to the altar is actually, it's sloping like a ladder going up. Mutzavatza, positioned on the ground. Zemizbeach. So that is the altar. So it's as if there's the altar and the slope. Ulefi perush zeh, and according to this explanation, Kae sulam al tfila. The sulam represents prayer. Now it's interesting that the Zohar itself says that the sulam, the ladder, represents prayer. And here the Rebbe, or the Tzemach Tzedek, is connecting it with the image in the Midrash that the ladder is like coming from the altar. There's the altar and the slope. Seemingly, the slope that goes up to the altar, it's as if it goes from the altar. And it's going higher and higher. And the connection of, what's the connection of prayer with the altar? What do you say?
Well, the sacrifices were instead of the prayer.
Yeah, or the other way around.
Yeah.
The prayers are instead of the sacrifices. Right. So there's the concept that our prayers represent the sacrifices in the temple.
But when the sacrifices were done, did people still do the prayers?
They did. Yes, there was, but it was a different kind of praying. It wasn't in the same way. And the Rambam says that originally, in the time of the first temple, they made up their own prayer when they said a prayer. But then, when they went into Babylon in the time of after the destruction of the first temple, they lost such skillful use of Hebrew. So when they came back to the land of Israel and to build the second temple, the sages of that time, the men of the great assembly, organized a prayer service. And that prayer service was together with the offerings in the temple. So in ancient Jerusalem, in the time of the Second Temple, there were synagogues as well as the temple itself. But the basic point is that there's a parallel between the prayers and the offerings. So that's one way of understanding the ladder. The ladder represents prayer. And that's a very significant concept. You've got the idea that the angels going up the ladder are the words of the prayers, going up the ladder, reaching towards God, or the yearning of the person, the ru'uta, the liban, the yearning of the heart, of the person going up the ladder towards God, and then the angels coming down are like the blessing which comes from God. So the ladder representing prayer is a very powerful image. But then comes the second explanation. Upeirush Hasheni, second explanation. Sulam ze Sinai. The ladder represents Mount Sinai. Ulafi Peirush ze, and according to this explanation, Kai Sulam ala Torah. The ladder, the image of the ladder, means the Torah. Ushnei Peirushim Elu, and these two explanations, Heim Bechinot Hasulam Shebikdusha. They are aspects of the ladder interpreted as something holy. So it's either prayer or Torah, but it's something holy. Va'achar kach mevi perush shlishi, and after that, the Tzemach Tzedek cites a third comment, a third explanation. Va'yachalom v'hinei sulam, and Jacob dreamt, and there was a ladder. Zer chalomo shel Nebuchadnezzar. This is the dream of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, the dream of Nebuchadnezzar is a very striking dream, which is there at the beginning of the book of Daniel. And the book of Daniel opens with the story of the fact that Nebuchadnezzar, having conquered the Jewish people and having a whole lot of Jewish captives, he says, you know what, the Jews are very clever. Let's get some Jewish children and bring them up in the palace. And they'll be a useful, think tank in times to come. So they brought a group of Jewish children into the palace. Now, of course, immediately the children are confronted with the problem of tray for food. So you have a little group of them headed by Daniel who refuse to eat the food that is being served. And the man who is serving them is very anxious about this. They say, you know, if they don't look well, it will be off with his head. So so they say, let us have vegetables. We just want vegetables. No meat and no wine. We just want vegetables. And he said, you won't look good. And they'll execute me. Try us for a fortnight. So he tried them for a fortnight on vegetarian food, and they flourished. They looked better than the other boys. So they were okay on that score. Now then, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. And it was a terrifying dream. There were two problems. One was he knew it was a terrifying dream and he didn't know what it meant. And the second one was he couldn't remember the details of the dream. Couldn't remember what the dream was. So he said to all his wise men, you got to tell me what is the dream I had and what it means. So they said, Your Majesty, tell us what the dream was and we'll tell you what it means. But we can't tell you what dream you had. And he was very angry and it was going to be off with all of their heads. So Daniel noticed that the people who were supposed to be looking after him looked very depressed. He said, what's the problem? And they told him the story. So he said, look, God can solve everything. I'll be able to do it. So they bring him along to the king. And he tells the king what is his dream. And he gives him an interpretation as well. So this is the dream over here. Now, let's see what the dream is. The Nebuchadnezzar hine. Now, this dream of Nebuchadnezzar, it was of a kind of a statue. And Mimare Motnov Lamaila Zahav, from its torso and above, in fact the head, Mimare Motnov Lamaila Tov, from its torso and above, was good, Umimare Motnov Lamato Ra, and from its waist downwards was bad. This was the statue that he saw in his dream. It's quoting from the book of Daniel, which is largely written in Aramaic. Its head was made of pure gold, good gold. Chadoi utraoi dikzaf. And then its chest and arms were silver. Ma'oi v'yerechate dinachash. Its belly and thighs were made of copper. Shakoi difazel, and its legs, the lower part of the leg, were iron. And ragloi, and its feet, minhein difazel, were partly iron, uminhein dichsaf, and partly clay. Right? It's an English phrase, feet of clay. So the feet of clay represent something very unstable. The iron mixed with clay, it doesn't hold. Now, and the Tzemach Tzedek explains this at length with various other teachings as well. And this is what the Tzemach Tzedek says. So we're looking at line 23. Now, basically, this statue represents a force which is a negative force. Even though the head is gold, when it comes down to the feet, that's something negative, and that is the clear image of something evil, something bad, something unstable, chaotic. What happens in the dream is that gazing at the statue, Nebuchadnezzar is like looking at the statue, and then a stone is flung at the statue and it shatters. And the stone itself grows and becomes a peaceful mountain. And so that force, this is not discussed in the discourse here, but it's as if the statue, which represents the power of evil in the world, although its source is good, which is the whole point of this discourse, that whatever is evil in the world, really it's got a good source, and ultimately everything can be elevated, and we can see beyond the way it looks at the moment, and we can raise it and see it in its good, in its positive source. So it's as if the negative force of this statue is shattered, and it becomes the mountain of Mashiach. But that's not gone into in this discourse. It's just looking at, the discourse is now looking at the question of evil and the source of evil. So now, at the bottom of the page, Lahavin, to understand, the Hine lefamim amru rabotenu zal. Sometimes our sages say, Gabe Maise de Iov, about the story of Job. Satan l'shem shamayim nitkaven. Satan acted for the sake of heaven. Now, the role of the Satan in the story of Job is that Job was a very good man, and God says to his angels in general, have you seen what a wonderful figure, or maybe he says it directly to the Satan, do you see what a wonderful servant of mine is, Job? He's really wonderful. Everything he does is so good. And Satan says, ah, does he serve you for nothing? He's only good because he's got everything. He's rich, he's got many children, he's got a huge flocks and cattle, and everything good. Take away all his wealth and his bounty, and you'll see that he'll bless you to your face, meaning the opposite. And so as a result of that comes the whole series of misfortunes, terrible things happening to Job. So the Talmud says here in Bava Batra that the Satan intended this. Why did he accuse Eve, Job? He intended it for the sake of heaven. And Kedeperish Rashi, as Rashi explains in the book of Job, Kedei shelo yehe nishkach lefnei lekeinu zchuto shel Avraham, so that God should not forget the merit of Abraham. Now, that's a rather mysterious explanation. Anyway, it's what the Talmud says, actually. And the Talmud says that it seems as if Job was going to be really considered the most wonderful, wonderful person. And as if Abraham would be forgotten by God. According to the chronology that Rashi presents, Job lived after Abraham. And in fact, the discourse doesn't talk about this, but the problem is that Job lived in the land of Canaan. And he was like the tzaddik in the land of Canaan. And the Jewish people had come out of Egypt. And they're supposed to go into the land of Canaan and conquer it. The problem is that Job's righteousness protected the land of Canaan, or Canaan. And they could not enter that land while Job was alive. That's why when the spies went into the land of Israel, they saw that there was a big funeral, which impressed them there very much. And they said, oh, people keep dying there. But it was a funeral of Job, because Job's grace, his merit, protected the land of Canaan, the land of Canaan. So it's as if there's some kind of spiritual battle taking place earlier. And what is the spiritual battle? Who is the great tzaddik? Who is the great righteous man? And if it's Job, so Job is like, in some sense, versus Abraham. That's the way the Talmud sees it. So Satan's intention was just in order to show that Abraham, when he was faced with a challenge, he didn't kick against God, he didn't want to curse, he didn't say, curse be the day I was born, it should never have happened, which is what Job said. But Abraham accepted whatever God sent him. So that was the purpose of Satan. So Satan, therefore, had a positive intention. And the Talmud tells us an interesting thing. You see, this explanation of the role of Satan is said by Rabbi Levi. But then there's another rabbi, Rabbi Acha, Rav Acha, and he gave a sermon using Rabbi Levi's teaching. He gave a sermon of Rabbi Levi's teaching of how the Satan only was acting for the sake of heaven in his afflictions that he brought on Job. Let's see if this is Chavi, 1 second. Where if it's the affliction that hold on just 1 second. Sorry. So where was I up to? So Rav Acha gave a talk using this idea. So you know what happened? The Satan came and kissed Rav Acha's feet. He said, thank you very much for presenting me in a good light. Okay, so the question is the Satan good or bad? Right? So if we look at it this way, the Satan is good. He's trying to do good things. However, if we go over the page to page Vav, ulefamim amru rabbeinu zichronam levracha, but sometimes our sages say the opposite. Natan einav b'mikdash rishon v'hechirivo. Satan looked at the first temple and destroyed it. And so that's a bad thing. So the Satan is clearly bad. How can you say he's good? How can you say Satan intended something for the sake of heaven? Satan is a force of evil. So what is it? Is it good or evil?
He's Hashem's emissary.
What?
He's Hashem's agent, isn't he? He couldn't have destroyed the temple without Hashem's knowledge or agreement.
Well, that's an interesting thing. See, one of the issues that this discourse, you know, if we manage to unravel it far enough, why do you need the concept of the Satan? Right? David's saying Satan is the emissary of God. So just say God destroyed the temple, God poured afflictions on Job. Why is there this sort of intermediary, the Satan thing?
Because then you're going to say that anything bad you do is God did it, not you.
That's an interesting thing. Hello.
If you'd like me to make yourself a hot drink, please do.
Now, how does that work? So if we have the concept of Satan, of Satan, so that means that bad... Thank you very much. Thank you. So how do you explain that, Nicole?
You're asking how... Why, it's basically one removed from a chef. I.e., if you didn't use it, if the Sultan didn't... if there wasn't a Sultan, then everybody would say, well, Hashem did the bad, the evil as well as the good. So in the same way, people, instead of taking responsibility, would just say, well, okay, it's not me, Hashem.
Interesting.
Yeah, but the angels are also separate. Yeah. Angels are also defined as separate.
Yes.
So perhaps that's what's giving them a hint that actually we're responsible regardless of forces of good and evil, we're actually responsible for what we do.
See, one way of understanding the Satan is it's the Yetzer Hara, it's the evil desire in a person. So that works very well with Nicole's thesis. So inside us is the evil desire, and we have to control it. You know, so there's the idea that the forces inside us, our own frame, we've got some kind of control over. If you just say it comes from God, then we haven't got control over it. Whereas if you say, look, there's a force, this force that is called Satan. And that Satan is actually inside me, and it's a force, it's a negative force. But I've also got the power to control it. As the Talmud says, God created the Yetzer Hara, the evil desire, and he created Torah as the spice. And it's interesting how it puts it. Not as something to knock it out, but the spice that will change the evil desire to something positive. It's as if you had a food which is very bitter, but if you cook it with the right spices, it becomes a delicious food. So that's...
But the Satan was supposed to be a fallen angel.
That's...
a Christian idea.
I think so. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it... I don't think that... the Jewish idea of the Satan is that it's the power, midat hadin. It's the attribute of severity. And in fact, le Satan means to accuse. So the Satan is the accuser. So it's the attribute of severity accusing Job or anyone, or the Jewish people. So it's this. So we have this whole interplay. You know, when it's Rosh Hashanah time, we want to confuse the Satan. So the Rebbe once said, the Satan doesn't have a calendar. Because we confuse it about when Rosh Hashanah is. All right, so now it goes into a piece of pure Kabbalah. Very interesting. I think this is from the discourse of the Tzemach Tzedek, but the Rebbe is saying it over, and it's quoting Eitz Chaim, the Tree of Life, the Kabbalistic book by Rabbi Chaim Vital. So let's see. Achainyan, the subject is as follows. Dinei Nizkav. So in other words, what is this force of evil? Is it good or bad? Is it pure good, pure bad? Or is it a mixture? Or is it a one step removed from God in some way, which is very close to the answer it's going to give him? Dehine nitzkabe etz chayim. It says in the Tree of Life, this basic Kabbalistic book containing the Lurianic teachings, sheklipot atzilut. That now klipa means a shell, and the shell means something negative. The nut represents the positive, and the shell is the negative. Sheklipot atzilut. The negative forces of the world of Atzilut don't stand in the world of Atzilut, because the world of Atzilut is completely pure. But they dwell in a lower realm, in the realm of Bria. So we have these four, worlds of emanation and creation and so on. So let's just try to understand. So we have Atzilut, that's the highest world, and then Bria, and then there's Yetzira going down, and finally Asiya, right? So these have English words: emanation, creation, formation, and action. Oops. Now, the idea is that in Atzilut itself, there is nothing negative. So if the red represents Klipa, the Klipa is only... So if each of these worlds has a kind of... Right? So that's the... Like each of those worlds. So in Atzilut, there's no Klipa. And in Bria, it's only in the lower part of... a little bit in the lower part. And in Yetzira, it's like half and half. And in Asiya, it's a considerable amount. So nothing in Atzilut. Atzilut's completely pure. Bria, there's only a little bit. Yetzira, there's more. And Asiya, in the world of action, it's mostly a concealment of the divine. I mean, that's basically what Klipa is. A concealment of the divine. Because if you see the divine, if you see the divine in what is around us and in other people, then obviously there wouldn't be any crime, there wouldn't be any murder, there wouldn't be anything negative, because you would see the divine in that thing. And it's only the concealment that means that there is the possibility of evil and the power of evil. So the Rebbe links this, I'm going to say it outside because it's quite complicated. And it's comparing what it says in this chapter of Eitz Chaim to what it says in the other chapter of Eitz Chaim. But he compares this to a midrash. And the midrash says, let's just see if I can find the midrash. It's Midrash Rabbah. And in Midrash Rabbah, it says, if you look on line 21 of page 12, Va'ayin barabot pashat bo. It's very interesting. This is the style of the Tzemach Tzedek. The Tzemach Tzedek had an encyclopedic mind, and when he looked at an issue, he would like quote many references. And here the Rebbe is like taking up these references and looking at it. See what it says in Midrash Rabbah. Giving a reference exactly where, and this is what it says. At the throne of God, nothing bad can touch it. As it says, evil cannot dwell with you. So the Rebbe fits that Midrash into these Kabbalistic statements that the Holy of Holies, you see there's a realm in the world of Bria which is the Holy of Holies. That is the higher part of Bria, like Chabad, Chochma Bina Dad. The higher part of Bria is pure, and the klipa only begins lower down. And so the Rebbe is connecting that with this midrash, which says that the throne of the divine, there's nothing bad. So in other words, there's a realm where nothing is bad, and then bad begins lower down. Now, so how does it work? We've got a realm which is, this is maybe the way we think about existence. If something is holy, so there's no bad. But when you're talking about ordinary dimensions of life, so everything is a mixture, and there's good and bad. But what the Rebbe wants to show is that the bad actually comes from the good. It's not just that it's at a lower level. The bad comes from the good. Now, on the next page, page Zion, he expresses that. Acha'inyan hu, but it's the hinei mevor b'makom acher, it explains elsewhere. On the verse, Vayas Moshe Nechash Nechoshe, Moses made a copper snake. Now, do you remember this story? Snakes were biting the Israelites in the desert. And so Moses made a copper snake, and he put it on a post, and anyone who'd been bitten by a snake looked at this copper snake, and they were healed. That sounds lovely. The problem is, I think it's in the Book of Kings, that it tells us that this copper snake that Moses made was destroyed. Why was it destroyed? It had turned into an idol. Okay. It was like a thing, you know, it was a whole cult around the copper snake of Moses, and somehow or other people began serving it as an idol. So a thing which is so holy that Moses himself made it, and he made it, I think God instructed Moses to make it, so and it cured the people. So something which starts off so beautifully suddenly becomes something negative and even has to be destroyed. They couldn't get rid of this snake cult without destroying it. Now, so this on page Zion, line 12. Acha'inyan hu, right, this thing about Moses making the copper snake. V'zeh l'shono. This is what the Tzemach Tzedek says. Dehine kol ra'ot v'dinim, rachmana nitzlan. All bad things and all bad judgment, whatever it is, shenithavu be'olam, which take place in the world, shochsham u'mekoram, the root and source, amachaye otam, which gives them life, hutov, is good. So the root of bad is good. This was actually one of the fundamental teachings of the Baal Shem Tov. And you know, when you try to analyze what actually were the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov, and this was one of his fundamental teachings. V'chimushal hazona im ben amelech hamavur b'zohar. As explained in the Zohar, the image of a harlot and the prince. Now, what's this? What does the Zohar say about the harlot and the prince? That there's a king, and it's quoted in Tanya. The king wants his son to be a very upright and moral person. And in order to ensure this, maybe an educationist wouldn't suggest this method, but what he does is he gets a harlot to come along and tempt the prince. Now, line 18, Shekol Ratzonav Heftza, her desire, let's look at the harlot, what she wants and what she desires. Her will and her desire, that he shouldn't listen to her. He should ignore her. Through that, she will be much happier than if he gives in and is tempted by her. Why? The king will be very pleased with her. The king will be very angry if the prince succumbs to her enticement. But that's what the king wants her to do, to entice the son, the prince. But really, she wants him to stand up against her. If she really seduces him, Ein zeraton amelech, that's not what the king wants. V'zeh maimah rabotenu zal. This is what our sages said. Satan upnina l'shem shamayim nitkavnu. Satan and also Penina. Penina, do you remember the role of Penina in Jewish history?
Wasn't she the one who kind of goaded on her sister because she couldn't have children and she got her to...
Yeah, not exactly her sister, her co-wife.
Co-wife, yeah.
Yeah.
To pray more to get...
That's right. Who was her co-wife?
I can't remember.
Chana, the mother of the prophet Samuel. So Chana was much beloved by her husband, but she didn't have any children.
Is that what we read on Rosh Chodesh Sivan or something?
We read it on Rosh Hashanah.
No, but for... I've got a feeling that... to help to be blessed with children, you read it Rosh Chodesh Sivan, don't you?
Oh.
I'm not sure.
All right, that's interesting. Anyway, so the point is, and Penina was her rival wife, Penina had several children, and Chana didn't, and Penina would goad Chana. So that seems that makes it look that Penina is a very nasty person. But the Gemara in the same place says that Penina also meant it l'shem shamayim, because what she was trying to push Chana to do, Chana was very contented. It's the way the Talmud presents it. She was contented, she's happy, she's got a husband who loves her very much, even though she doesn't have children. And Penina says, by goading her, she will get Chana to pray for children, and that's what we see in the beginning of the book of Samuel, how she is very intensely praying to have children, and the high priest Eli can't understand what she's doing and thinks she's drunk. And eventually she has the prophet Samuel. She gets pregnant and has the prophet Samuel. So, and she's a particular positive image. So Penina meant it for the good. So there's another example of someone doing something bad, which really comes from good, that the shoresh hara hamechayehu hu tov, that the root of the evil which gives it life is actually good. Line 23. Ukoshe yored lamata, but when the evil comes down below, I mean it starts off good, but as it comes down below, al derech hishtal shelo, through the down chaining of the world, nase be'emet ra gamu, it becomes complete bad. So that's what the that's what the Tzemach Tzedek is quoting. Now, v'hine ma'achash v'shosha hu tov. Since in its root it's good, d'ahaynu mishal azona. Let's go back to this image of the harlot. Shechefza be'emet, her real desire, shelo yitzayet ota ben, that the prince should not listen to her. V'tismach ma'od, and she'll be really be happy. Kushalo yifateb haben, if he's not, doesn't let himself be seduced. Kamo sheyismach ha'av, just as his father will be pleased if he's not seduced. And she has exactly the same feeling. So in other words, the zona is like the Satan. God is the father. So the Satan comes to tempt people in various ways, but it really wants us to stand up against him. And that's the Yetzer Hara inside the heart of a person, trying to push a person to do the wrong thing, but its real desire is that we should stand up against it. The im kein, all right, if so, ein hefresh beina levena av. There's no difference between the zona, between the harlot, and the father. Ele ba'asiyot ha-nisayon le-nasot ha-ben. The only difference is it's the harlot who tempts the son. This action of enticement, of the Yetzirah, you could say, it looks as if the Yetzirah, the harlot, really wants to entice the person into bad. Even though this isn't true at all. רק שמרבשת עצמה בלבוש שאינה שלה. The harlot, the Yetzer Hara, puts itself into a garment which isn't his, ונגד רצונה, and against its will. רק בשביל השמחה שיהיה לאב, only for the sake of the joy that the father will have, כשיעמוד הבן בניסיון, when the son stands up in this test and passes the test. So in other words, the Rebbe is saying that the evil desire that we have within us, really its desire is good. And it only looks at some point as if it's tempting us into something bad, and it just wants us to stand up against it. Hinei im kol zeh, nonetheless, says the Rebbe, kevun shalavush hu hester gamur, since this garment is a complete concealment, v'davar hara u'ma b'tachlid, and it's something bad and bitter. The harlots, the whole image, the satan, the evil desire, it's negative. Lachen inei av, therefore the father, avar picha b'vaday yitzmach yoter, even though he's going to be very happy, k'shiyamod ha-ben b'nisayon, when the son stands up to the temptation, lo yuchal litlabesh b'atzmo, he can't himself be enclosed b'levush hafchi, in an opposite garment, ulahasti atzmo kol kach, to conceal himself, lenasot haben baatzmo, that God Himself should entice the son. So that's very interesting. Why there is the concept of Satan? Why there's this the concept of the evil desire? As Nicole was saying, there's this gap, laharot lo, to show שיחפוץ שיומשך ברחס ושלום, as if God would pretend that he wants evil. God can't do that. God doesn't want that he should be the one to tempt us into evil. No, there's another force. There's the Satan, there's the evil desire, there's the harlot. One second. Yeah. Now I'm worrying about my wife. till she realizes. Right.
Still very much an image of an agent of Hashem. He can't do it himself, for it's too direct. So he has to appoint someone else to do it.
It is
removed,
well, as Maureen said, you know, it's like the angels, you know, are some kind of agent, and the Satan is that. But here we get, you know, so you can wonder, you know, why do you need to have these agents? You know, why can't you just say it's all from God? Everything is from God. But it's the way in which God is so much concealed, the divine force. The divine force is concealed so strongly that it emerges as something which is tempting the person into evil, and so that's the thing, is that with the evil desire in Hasidic thought, the evil desire is very complex, because there's one kind of evil desire that wants a person to do bad things. There's another kind of evil desire that wants them to do good things, just inappropriate at that particular moment. And there's even, so there's a frum evil desire. And there's even a concept of a Hasidic evil desire. So,
for example...
Well, the Talmud actually gives an example. I don't know if it's exactly a Hasidic evil desire. It gives an example of a Hasid Shote, a pietist who is a fool. And what is he? He's someone who's walking along and he suddenly realizes that a girl has fallen into the river, or she was swimming in the river, and she's drowning. And he doesn't want to jump in and save her. He says, oh, you know, I'm too holy, too religious, to try to help this woman in the water. Maybe she's not wearing clothes. So that's called a fake chassid. So there he's using some kind of pietistic idea for bad, in a bad direction. And you can have examples of that in daily life today. Nicole is full of ideas, I can see. Amusing, eh? Hold on. Right. Now. Okay, so line 8. So here he's explaining how the harlots... all right, so it's not working. So switch it off, then. The ilazot... Thank you. Thank you. The ilazot, however, hazona, the harlot, kevan shechola litabesh ulahastir tzma kol kach, since she's able to hide her real desire so much, lefatot et haben la'avera, to entice here, Chavi, quick. All right. So therefore, now, so we've got the situation that there's something. There's a force which, although it wants good, it can come down into bad. And how can this be? Now, the previous Rebbe, the Rebbe now quotes the previous Rebbe, who said this is Gvura Shebechesed, severity which is in kindness. So imagine you've got a very kind relationship with this child. You love the child very much. But now the child is doing something dangerous. He's picked up a knife. So you start shouting at him to put the knife down. Now, although your intention is purely good, in fact, it's still gvura, it's anger. If you would have been able to get the knife away from the child without shouting at him, it would have been better. So the severity in itself is severity. There's a passage in Tanya where it speaks about a father who is hitting his child in order to correct the child. Rabbi Shneur Zalman is saying, you know, if God sends suffering to a person, it's like God who is inflicting a punishment on a child, then we should accept it because it's coming from God. Okay, pray to God, improve your acting. You know, but don't... He's saying don't go from city to city asking people to pray on your behalf. But it uses the phrase a wise father, and then it says a wise and chassid father. Now, the wise father, it speaks about him hitting the child, but it doesn't call him chassid. It's a couple of lines later where he's not hitting the child anymore. That's where he's called chassid. So in other words, there's a level of kindness which is beyond this negativity. However, we are in a world where the chesed, the kindness of Hashem, has a garment of gvura, of severity. And it's that garment of severity which comes down. And so that is the case of Satan and Job, and that's why so we're talking about this very ambiguous realm. Let's just try to let's follow the Rebbe on page Tet, line 10. V'lachen yuvan namaskil, therefore one can understand, she'ime yotcha kavanah mitit, even though the ultimate purpose is betachlit l'shem shemaim, is totally for the sake of heaven. Im kol zeh inyan alavush ra, despite this, the bad garment shahakavana mitlabeshet bo, in which the intention is enclosed, ein alavush yachol yot klal bevchinat atzilut. That garment cannot be in the realm of atzilut. We go back to our diagram. That we have the idea of something good, only it's coming down in a negative garment. It cannot be in the world of atzilut, because it's got that negativity. Because since the garment is complete concealment and bad, it can't be in the realm of atzilut, but in the world of creation, and or lower down as well. Because there's a kind of a barrier, which is a concealment between Atzilut and the lower worlds, and it's only in that lower realm that bad can be seen as bad. Sham yuchal liot ahester, there can be the concealment, lavalea et iuv, to afflict Job, or lenasot et Avraham, or for that matter, to test Abraham. The test comes from a lower level. And that is the way that the Satan is a force among the angels. You mentioned the angels, Maureen, and so does the book of Job. The Satan is among the other angels. And that's where it is able to act. Umikol makom, nonetheless, kevan shekavanato l'shem shamayim, since its goal is for the sake of heaven, it is called nikret klipat atzilut. It's called a negative thing of the world of atzilut. It's still got this relationship with atzilut, with the highest realm, shebo ein shum ra klal, where there's no bad at all. Av shalavush hu ra, even though the garment's bad. Zeh rak levush, but it's only a garment. And it comes from that lower realm in Briya. So we have this sense of ambiguity. If we go on to the next page, page Yud, line 17. V'zehu shedarash Rav Acha. And that is what Rav Acha taught in Bava Batra, having heard this teaching from Rabbi Levi. He taught it himself. Satan l'shem shamayim nitkaven. The Satan had a positive goal. Now, what does it mean he taught this? Perush, that means shedarash vihimtik harad asiya. When he taught it, he was sweetening the bad of the realm of action, so that he elevated it to its root. Because the root which gives it life is actually good. Like the copper snake of Moses. So in other words, when Rav Acha was teaching about this idea that the Satan wanted, his intention was for the sake of heaven, he wasn't just saying something. He was having an effect. He was transforming something. V'lachein ata Satan v'nashkei akarei. And that's why the Satan came and kissed his feet. And that means nitbatel v'nichlal bevchinat madrega achrona shebikdusha. The Satan, instead of being something apparently separate and different and a rival to godliness and holiness, it became absorbed in the lowest level of holiness, bechinat nefesh hod yesod, which is called feet in Kabbalah, and that's why it kissed his feet, because now the Satan was absorbed in the feet, so to speak, of holiness. Now, when the Rebbe says this, in a sense, my understanding is the Rebbe is doing the same thing. He's trying to take something which is bad and sweeten it and transform it and elevate it to its root. And its root is good. And in fact, you could say that this is a defining characteristic of what a true Hasidic Rebbe is, that he is able to take the negativity in the life of the person as an individual, or the life of the Jewish people as a whole, or the life of the world, and elevate it so that in that realm of concealment, where there in fact seem to be many things which are bad, there are some things which are bad because of people making evil choices and doing evil things, and there are other things which are bad because there's a tsunami, there's a hurricane, there's a storm, there's a flood, there's something, an earthquake, God forbid. All these terrible things happening. So there's moral bad and there's natural bad, if you like. That's people call today natural evil and moral evil. And all of it is the same concealment of the divine. It's different versions of concealment of the divine. And in that, what the Rebbe is describing really as the task of the Jew, whom he puts in the form of this Rav Acha in the Talmud, that we and he, the Rebbe, teach in such a way that and teach about that evil itself has a sublime source. And by looking at life in this way and understanding the Torah in this way, we elevate the evil to its source so that it is indeed transformed and it becomes good in practical terms around us. And so that is the so that is this powerful teaching. And then it goes on with the ladder. There's a midrash which talks about Jacob going up the ladder. It's ascending the ladder. But that, you see, that image, the statue of Nebuchadnezzar, that statue represents actually the four kingdoms. And that's another interpretation of it. But taking it as the force of negativity, it's the force of negativity which ultimately is going to be revealed as something good. And the origin of that source of negativity is the head of gold, which is really holy and spiritual. And that ultimately is going to be what will be revealed in the world. So that's the goal. And so we are taking part together with these spiritual teachings informing Judaism and Jewish life in transforming the actual desolation of bad, but seeing that hidden there somewhere is a source which is ultimate good, which is the essence of the divine, making the world and everything else exist, including all those masks and concealments. And ultimately, they will all be revealed.